If any of these forks had meaningfully gained ground relative to Bitcoin, the critics would have had a point. What's the point of a monetary network which is undergoing a constant state of fragmentation? The best in Bitcoin made audible. I am Guy Swan, and this is Bitcoin Audible. What's up, guys? Welcome back to Bitcoin Audible. Bitcoin is holding strong at this price level. Really interesting. There is not much selling pressure above. It's going to be an interesting couple of weeks here. We are definitely in some seriously bullish territory. The price at the time of recording is $15,243. And I am Guy Swan, the guy who has read more about Bitcoin than anybody else you know. Now, I wanted to announce it will not be in this feed, but we have a new episode of Shitcoin Insider dropping, and it is all about the Bitcoin forks. So we're actually going to read a post related to this, which I didn't actually even realize was Nick Carter when I saved it. But it is another Nick Carter post. This one is from CoinDesk, and it is titled "The Hard Forks That Didn't Dilute Bitcoin," and the Shitcoin Insider episode that I will be dropping today as well. So go check that out on the feed for that show. That one is also about the Bitcoin forks, Bcash, and the hard fork mess that is going over there and will be happening supposedly in the next couple of days. And then also BSV, which there has been a huge news event very recently with that, which is hilarious. I'm going to get into it in like a little section at the end of that show. Real quick, if you haven't checked out our sponsor, Hexa Wallet, they have a awesome mobile wallet for Bitcoin. It literally gets so much better with every single update, and they have tons of cool features. And right now the mempool is actually really low. Everything has cleared back up. So now is a great time if you want to open some Lightning channels or you want to test out and start playing around with a new mobile wallet like Hexa. This is the perfect time to do so. So check them out at hexawallet.io and give them a shout out. Give them a thanks from me for supporting Bitcoin Audible and bringing all of this audio to you so that you can listen to the best in Bitcoin. You could just listen. You could do your other things. And I'll just tell you all about Bitcoin, all the best articles, and all the greatest stuff in it. That's what I'm here for. So, without further ado, let's go ahead and get into today's article. Another one by Nick Carter. I don't know why we're doing Nick Carter every other episode lately. He just won't stop writing good stuff, apparently. And it is on CoinDesk, and titled, "The Hard Forks That Didn't Dilute Bitcoin." Some time ago, one of the more thoughtful critiques of Bitcoin went a little like this. Sure, Bitcoin is scarce in its supply, but since it's effectively costless to clone the software and fork it, it's not scarce overall. Forks constitute effective dilution and render the Bitcoin system's commitment to a hard cap irrelevant. This wasn't altogether a terrible point. For a moment in 2017, it seemed like Bitcoin was being forked on a weekly basis. I'll confess to feeling a twinge of concern when Bitcoin Cash launched on Coinbase at $4,000, and it seemed like a genuine possibility that it might surpass Bitcoin. One of Bitcoin's peculiarities is the fact that anyone can costlessly replicate its UTXO set and claim affiliation to the original chain. Some particularly confident promoters have even gone as far as to claim their forks actually constitute the original Bitcoin, with the legacy chain being the imposter. If any of these forks had meaningfully gained ground relative to Bitcoin, the critics would have had a point. What's the point of a monetary network which is undergoing a constant state of fragmentation? I was reminded of this concern by MicroStrategy CEO Michael Saylor in his recent appearance on Anthony Pompliano's podcast. Saylor, the first public company CEO to allocate a meaningful portion of his company's balance sheet to Bitcoin, had this to say.
And by the way, the hard forks, I think, are a big advantage. The fact that Bitcoin went through it And we saw what happened, and we saw that the community would defend Bitcoin. That's what gives a person like me confidence to invest hundreds of millions of dollars in Bitcoin. I don't want to hear that you've got a new idea and you're upset over transaction fees and you would like to implement smart contracts, so you got to change everything. I don't want to hear that. I want to hear that you're going to defend the network to the death against someone that's going to break it or compromise it in any way, shape, or form.
With the benefit of hindsight, it's now clear the Challenger forks have been completely rejected. This wasn't something that was evident in 2017, and it's indicative of Bitcoin's continued maturation as a monetary asset of consequence. There are many ways to measure the salience of forks, but the simplest is their aggregate economic significance. When you adjust for free float, as in taking into account only units which are actually circulating, BCH amounts to a meager 1.7% of Bitcoin's market capitalization, an all-time low since inception. Bitcoin SV accounts for a measly 1%. Transaction fees, used to guarantee the sustainability of miner revenue and hence network security in the long term, are robust in Bitcoin, more than $700,000 daily, and practically non-existent in BCH and BSV, $137 a day and $73 a day over the last week, respectively. If they can't muster demand for their block space, and I don't see any catalyst to reverse this trend, they will be forced to reintroduce inflation, centralize block signing, or devise some new consensus mechanism. And if you eliminate non-monetary op return transaction, used to insert arbitrary data into the blockchain, Bitcoin Cash settles around 12,000 transactions a day, compared to Bitcoin's 350,000. For a network whose foundational value proposition involved vastly increasing the supply of block space to pursue the low-fee, peer-to-peer petty cash vision of Bitcoin, this is a considerable letdown. 3 years on, the core hypothesis of Bitcoin Cash, that cheaper block space would be more amenable to vibrant on-chain commerce, looks more remote than ever. How long must enthusiasts defer their dream before they admit that a minority, largely undifferentiated clone of Bitcoin isn't a particularly compelling proposition? Today, BCH is facing an insurrection and yet another hard fork due to an inability to finance its core developers. Unlike Bitcoin, it never developed a meaningful patronage system, so now certain BCH developers are holding the chain hostage and demanding that miners be expropriated to subsidize their work. The looming hard fork is a consequence of founding the chain on a secessionist impulse. If your reaction to disputes is to fork the chain rather than resolve them, you are likely condemning yourself to a litany of future forks. All of this bodes poorly for future minority forks. Investors tend to fight the last war. As BCH, BSV, and other more marginal forks fade into irrelevance, they will be very wary of any newer protest forks. Back in 2017, it was popular to proclaim that Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies were governed by the possibility of exit. If users and investors disagreed with the direction of the project, they could simply fork it and build something more to their liking, or so the saying went. This always rankled me because the natural end state of this paradigm, if taken to its logical conclusion, would be a hopeless fragmentation of Bitcoin's user base into dozens of marginally different tribes. This seems unacceptable. Bitcoin is designed such that users agree over a very narrow set of principles in order to obtain global convergence on a UTXO set. The smaller the argument space, the less likely the project is riven by irreconcilable differences between users. By refusing to compromise on its key features, Bitcoin has retained its luster while avoiding capture. Interestingly, it's this inflexibility that permits it to appeal to a heterogeneous user base. Bitcoin users do not need to believe in anything other than the merit of a sound, finite supply, fast-settling digital money system. As Saylor notes, far from being a drawback, Bitcoin's rigidity is a source of strength and credibility. We're talking about monetary goods here, something you'd feel confident allocating your savings to for decades. Bitcoin's stewards don't take this task lightly, and it shows. It's clear now that Bitcoin's network-driven advantages are insurmountable. If Bitcoin were to be supplanted as a digitally native sound money, its challenger would have to be radically different, with dramatic 10x improvements in multiple key domains. Bitcoin is by no means guaranteed to win as the internet's sole sound money. But at the very least, we can put one old critique to bed. And that concludes our piece by Nick Carter on CoinDesk, titled "The Hard Forks That Didn't Dilute Bitcoin." So this latest kind of entry to the bull market really kind of has solidified. This article specifically was written on October 1st, just the last 3 or 4 weeks of bullishness in Bitcoin, I guess you could say really a month ago, has truly cemented the fact that Bitcoin is separate from these other assets. And I think we will continue to see this. I think I don't expect much to grow at all. And I could always be wrong. You know, the lack of liquidity and the, you know, penny stocks always behave like penny stocks. And I think that is the best analogy. And that's what we get into on a Shitcoin Insider. So if you really kind of want to dig into those, know what the hard fork is about, know what's going on in BSV, I encourage you to listen to episode 2 of Shitcoin Insider because we get all into this. I just found it funny that this was exactly what we were talking about, and I had remembered that this article was here, so it just felt like perfect timing. But I'm pretty certain both of them, if not, I know BCH has dropped two pretty significant red candles that are below the all-time low for the lowest it's ever been against Bitcoin, basically. And, you know, before there was any real clear, Nick Carter's right in this piece that, like, back in 2017, it was like every week there was Bitcoin Diamond, there was Bitcoin Rhodium, there was Bitcoin Gold, there was Bitcoin Silver. It was just everything that you could possibly think of. There was just fork after fork after fork. I never really put much credence, I guess you could say, to the Bitcoin is scarce, but you can just clone it indefinitely. Because, you know, like as he says, you know, what's the value in 1,000 copies that are only marginally different from Bitcoin? It's like saying that, oh, you can just clone the dollar, which, what does that look like? It looks like the euro, it looks like the Venezuelan bolivar, it looks like the German mark, the Chinese yuan. Like, I mean, there's almost no marginal difference, it's a very marginal difference between any of these currencies. They work on essentially the same sort of infrastructure. They work with largely the exact same set of rules. They just have different sets of masters and different sets of policy, like people directing their policies, but they're the same thing. It's like, you know, a different coin with a different set of developers. It's not any different. It's the same structure. That's why we call them fiat, because they are all the same. Now, does creating 100 other fiat currencies for other countries or whatever dilute the dollar? No. It clearly doesn't. They're separate networks. But you could argue that, you know, in an open system, when you fail to understand or dismiss the idea of how markets converge around networks and converge around dominant or universal communication mechanisms or communication protocols, you could rightfully think, or at least I guess you could excuse the idea that, oh, all the forks of Bitcoin are going to just keep diluting Bitcoin and there is no real hard cap. And, you know, this is a criticism that Peter Schiff still uses today, even after years of it being proven so obviously misguided, I guess you could say. Ignorance, probably a better word for it. But admittedly, you know, back in 2017, when there wasn't a clear direction for this, it was, you know, I'll agree with Nick Carter that I felt a little bit of like, man, this could get really messy. You know, like This was not a clear a winner. Bitcoin Cash was legitimately over half of the value of Bitcoin during these crazy swings. I remember it happening at like 1 o'clock in the morning or something crazy like that. I don't remember, but like I was like waking up, like I had been sleeping on the floor in the living room with staying at with some friends or whatever. I think it was for Halloween, if I'm not mistaken. I guess it was August. I don't know what we were doing. Maybe it was because Bitcoin Cash didn't happen in August. That was just when SegWit got activated. No, I think it was. It was right around Halloween. But I remember waking up and watching the charts and everything going crazy, and I was like super excited and I couldn't sleep. And I felt like it was a really, really potent test of Bitcoin, of the network effects, of how these protocols were in fact going to sort out their differences, and kind of the culture would move forward. So I saw it as an incredibly pivotal point. And at the same time that I was super excited and just couldn't, I couldn't contain myself in the sense that, I just had to watch and it seemed like something really, really big was happening. But at the same time, there was concern. Like, it was exciting because it was nervous. You know, we were about to see a major point of the game theory of the ideology behind Bitcoin, and the arguments that we've had, vicious arguments that had been had for 3 or 4 years, tested. Like, this was, you know, everything that I had said, this was it going to be battle tested in real life. Like this wasn't just an argument on Reddit anymore. This was it. This was playing out everything that we said would potentially happen and what would be valued in the protocol. And, you know, we could have been wrong, but I just think there was plenty of evidence, obviously. And now I think we've been, you know, the perspective has been completely vindicated that this is about reliability. This is about assurances. And when you're just splitting, when you're just breaking the protocol every 6 months, that's the most insane thing that's happened. I don't want to get too much into it because we literally dig into all of these specifics about the shitcoins on Shitcoin Insider. If you want to go that next level deep, listen to the show. But they've literally just said that they're going to have a hard fork every 6 months. Like they've just built their protocol around the lack of assurances, around the lack of consistency, around we're just going to break it and force everybody to update. Like, it could not be a more centralized system. Like, they've explicitly chased away any idea of decentralization in the code and basically put this center of authority as to what software everybody's going to run. And like Michael Saylor said in the quote that we've got from him, is that nobody putting in hundreds of millions of dollars wants to hear that. Nobody wants to hear about the fact that we don't know what the code is going to be. We don't know what the consensus rules are going to be. We have no idea what Bitcoin is even going to look like, or what the network itself, what the rules of the network will be, including the monetary policy. As soon as you just start throwing consensus rules out the window, the monetary policy is part of that. And it doesn't even have to be that you purposefully change the monetary policy, but as soon as you've changed the consensus rules, you've put the monetary policy at risk. Everything is at risk because now the code, which decides what is truth and what is a lie, has been altered. And the whole reason a cryptographic system or a network like this is secure, the only reason we know, is because it survives for a longer amount of time without being killed, without being destroyed, without being compromised. That is the Lindy effect. The longer something has survived and done its job and continues to do so, the more we expect it to continue to survive in the future. That's the Lindy effect. If you hard fork every 6 months, you're resetting it. You're resetting one of your strongest indicators of security and assurances that the system even has. You're never going to convince everybody that you're never going to get everybody in the whole world to be able to review the code. Their mechanism of judging whether or not it's got a good reputation or whether or not it's reliable is how long it survived. That's it. And you've killed it. It just seems so crazy to me. But I think, you know, Nick Carter's right in this piece is that this is indicative of, you know, Bitcoin's maturation as a monetary asset. You know, while it wasn't evident in 2017, now it could not be more evident. And it's clear that forks are going to be meaningless going forward. Anybody deciding there will not be another BCH and BSV. If anybody decides that Bitcoin isn't doing the right thing and they fork off, it will go the way, or it will appear as quote unquote important as Bitcoin Rhodium and Bitcoin Diamond. And I bet about 99% of the people listening to this did not know that either of those things existed. And that's what I expect. It will increasingly be seen as pointless. And there will be too many other avenues to accomplish what they are trying to accomplish, particularly with Lightning Network, particularly with the new development of shadow chains and being able to create any sort of application you could possibly want and securely conduct Bitcoin transactions with that application just using the normal time lock and multi-sig. And you could do this entirely off-chain. This was the whole Lightning Marketplace that we were just talking about on the show a couple episodes back. This is essentially any smart contract application or anything that anybody wants to build can be done off-chain securely with Bitcoin. Lightning Network can do a lot of these things anyway. You can write complex contracts. You can lock to any HTLC. And we've got DLCs. Like the number of things that the number of supposed purposes for altcoins and all of these shitcoins are becoming clearly and easily possible on top of Bitcoin in a variety of different ways. And the entire value case, because they weren't concerned with the money, they were concerned with the features. As soon as you can do the feature somewhere else, as soon as you can do the feature on top of Bitcoin, the whole value case for the entire, for creating an entirely separate network just vanishes. It just poof, it goes out the window. But the big thing with specifically the Bitcoin forks, BCH and BSV, is that their whole value case was transactions, and nobody is using them. They don't have, they have tiny, tiny blocks. BCH has tiny blocks and had hardly anything filling up their blocks when they forked from 8 megabytes to 32 megabytes. I mean, they're making bigger blocks just for the sake of saying that they can do more transactions, but no one is using them for transactions. If that was the demand, if that was what made it quote-unquote valuable, why isn't everyone using them? But Nick Carter makes a really great point that, you know, they complain and point out like the cries of like heavy transaction or high transaction fees on Bitcoin are endless from basically the Bitcoin fork space. And what's hilarious is that that's the opposite of a bad thing. Is that we know long-term network security has to operate on fees. And when Bitcoin pulls in $700,000 in fees a day, and BCH and BSV do $137, not $137,000, $137.73, how are they going to keep their network secure? Not only are they dealing with 1%, 2% of the entire network hash rate, and they could be blasted with a 51% attack with very little expenditure or very little hash rate coming from Bitcoin, taking a break, wreaking havoc on BCH or BSV, and then jumping right back on Bitcoin. Aside from that, just having a long-term network security, if the push for transactions, if the demand for transactions are not what sustained the demand for those forks, and then at the same time, they don't want to have any transaction fees, well, then how are they going to secure the network? What are they going to do after they run out of inflation? They're either going to have to reintroduce inflation, which they can do because they're hard forking all the time, and they probably will because it's going to be politicized, and or they need to centralize block signing. They basically need volunteers somehow, or create an entirely new consensus mechanism, proof of stake, or you know whatever it is. And you know, we said this, we argued this, that that's going to be on the table if you start just deciding that the consensus rules are whatever we feel like they are at any particular time. If just the concern over a small increase in transaction fees and whether or not you could easily buy coffee on the base chain, not whether or not you could buy coffee with Bitcoin, but that you explicitly must be able to do it with a cheap on-chain fee that's broadcasted to the entire world and stored indefinitely on hard drives everywhere, if that tiny insignificant issue is what caused a hard fork, how is the network, the fundamental network security over the fees or inflation and or lack thereof inflation, not going to produce the exact same result? How is that not going to be a politically contentious issue when buying coffee was enough to split the network? Nick Carter basically says it in this, is that, you know, when you start this thing based on the every time there's a disagreement, well, we're just going to break the rules, or we're just going to cut the consensus and go run off and do a completely different thing for any sort of marginal difference between the ideas of how to run this software. Well, then, you know, every time a dispute comes up, it's going to end up in a fork. Like, there's never going to be a way to resolve it within the sets of consensus rules that we have. And, you know, the now many year old saying that I've said numerous times, Jimmy Song says it, like every Bitcoin maximalist who has seen all of this, it was so clear when BSV broke from BCH. I mean, that's the only reason BSV exists, is because there was a dispute with Bitcoin Cash. So, you know, you live by the fork, you die by the fork. Like, it's just going to dilute into meaninglessness until no project has any cohesive idea of what the hell it is. And there's not enough development and enough funding or enough consensus around any one project for any of them to even have any decent development, which just got proved in the last couple of days with BSV. But again, not going to get into it on this show. If you want to listen to Shitcoin Insider, we get into all the dirty specifics. But anyway, really great article. Another one always by Nick Carter. Great stuff. I love that I didn't even know this was Nick Carter. I just remember seeing this article and I was like, oh, this is a good one. And I'd like skim through it. And I was like, I'm probably going to read this one on the show and get back. And it's Nick Carter. Go figure. Don't forget to follow Nick Carter. And check out CoinDesk. I don't always agree with everything on CoinDesk. They have a lot of altcoin stuff, but obviously they hired Nick Carter, and he's got a gold mine of work up there, as well as on his blog. So don't forget to check all that out. I will have the link to the original article, which he's got a couple of little graphics and charts that go along with it, and just kind of show the trajectory of all of these things over the years. Show the transaction amounts, the difference between the op return transactions and the normal transactions, et cetera, et cetera. So you can kind of see a lot of the arguments that he was making in the article in a visual form. And it definitely, definitely drives the point home. And I will have the link to the other episode of Shitcoin Insider if you want to listen to, if you really want to keep going down this rabbit hole and hear another hour and some change of us digging into all the garbage, because we talk all about it. But that will conclude our episode for today. Thank you so much for listening to Bitcoin Audible. Don't forget to check out Hexa Wallet. You know, that mempool, it will eventually grow to a really large size and never actually empty back out. We're very lucky to have another calm before the storm, I think, with a low mempool. So when you're checking out a on-chain Bitcoin wallet, particularly one that is going to have Lightning in the future and that has built-in batching, if you're moving to a mobile wallet and you're concerned or thinking at all ahead about on-chain fees, batching is absolutely critical. And again, I don't know of a single wallet on mobile that has batching outside of Hexa Wallet. And of course, it is all the other great things about mobile wallets, non-custodial, seedless, privacy preserving. You don't need to make an account, a really clever backup system, and you can add contacts to other people who have Hexa Wallet, multiple accounts with multiple degrees of security, like a single key saving, a single key checking and multi-factor savings, all that great stuff. So many things packed into this wallet. Definitely check it out and DM me on Twitter if you want to be a contact, or if you want to help me be, or if you want me to be a keeper in helping to keep your backup safe. With that, we will close out this wonderful episode of Bitcoin Audible. I am Guy Swan, the guy who's read more about Bitcoin than anybody else you know. And always remember, don't hold the forks. You're going to get yourself in trouble, and they're less and less relevant as every day goes by. You want to hold a secure, reliable, long-term money that you know isn't going to go anywhere, that you know its consensus rules have survived the test of time and have survived in the wild against true adversaries and is truly decentralized and here to stay for the long term. That, ladies and gents, is Bitcoin. So stack sats, hold your keys, protect your privacy, and listen to Bitcoin Audible. I'm Guy Swan, and until next time, everybody, take it easy. This has been a 111 production, and you are listening to Bitcoin Audible on the Crypto Economy Network.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.